Tonight at 5, our emphasis and our prayer is going to be on our missions projects, including, as Casey was saying, Steve and Sue, his wife. Look forward to some of you getting better acquainted with them. For those of you who don't know, Steve and Sue Marshall are a part of our church, been sent out by our church to begin a new church south of here a little ways. And they've been going for a good couple of years now. And I've asked him to share with us what made him leave his career, leave his security to do such a thing. And I think it'll be a challenge to you. As we approach missions this year, we're going to be doing missions emphasis in the month of August. And as we approach this year's missions, I want us to focus on three things: sending, praying, and going. And I want to emphasize on going this year. Emphasize that word go. Where do missionaries come from? There's no missionary factory. It's not just a special group somewhere in the world that sends out missionaries. Missions comes from people in churches just like ours, from people just like you who have a heart for God and are open and listening to God and the Spirit. And God places such a burden in them that they cannot do anything but obey and listen to God. That's where missionaries come from. I want you to hear tonight from such a person himself as he speaks to us. And we're going to pray for them and ask God's best and blessings on them. Today, we're continuing with this series after a break last week from our guest, Mark and Tanya Malott, coming in. Was that a blessing? It was such a blessing to me to have them. And I hope that they were in turn a blessing to you. And I hope that the message and testimony of Mark blessed you as well. But today we're continuing this series, When You're Running on Empty. When you're running spiritually on empty. And I want to focus on slowing down a little bit. So I'm going to speak much slower. Maybe I speak too fast sometimes, and I need this message on slowing down. So it's going to be a little longer than normal, because I'm not cutting anything out. Hey, technology in the world is fantastic. I like technology, but it's made a few things happen as well. First of all, our world has gotten really smaller with technology. Have you noticed? It's not such a big place anymore. Also, our world has gotten more complex. It's not simple. Things are complicated. People are more complicated. Our work is more complicated. Our weeks seem to be more complicated. And also, it's going faster. Our world has speeded up a lot. It's going faster. Everything is faster. I want a confession right now. How many of you have gotten speeding tickets in the last 5 years? Have you gotten faster? You gotten speeding tickets. Don't you hate that? Listen, my confession. I've gotten only one speeding ticket in my life, and it was from a speed camera. And they sent us a picture, and me and Jennifer looked at this stupid picture, and it was in our old Volkswagen Beetle. I don't know how we got a speeding ticket in our Beetle. But we're looking at this picture, and we couldn't figure out who it was on that Saturday that was driving down that road. And I think it was Jen, so I'm still not convinced I've ever gotten a speeding ticket. I've been pulled over many times for speeding by police, either in the U.S. or even here. I've been pulled over for speeding. I've always gotten let off with a warning somehow. Now, for a little information, FYI here, it's better for you guys to get pulled over than it is for me to get pulled over for speeding. I'll tell you why. Invariably, when the policeman is talking to you, he always asks this question. Do you know what question I'm talking about? Yeah, okay, what do you do for a living? I'm like, oh, man. I remember one time we were visiting the States in Texas, and this long, long, never-ending road, and you just kind of get cruising, going faster and faster. I got pulled over for speeding. And the guy asked that question, so what do you do for a living? I said, I'm a pastor, I'm a minister. And he looks at me and says, oh, so you don't think you have to obey the laws of the land? I said, no, sir, that's not what I said. So they love giving you a hard time if you're a pastor and you're caught speeding. He did let me off too, though. He said, okay, I'll give you a warning this time. But the world's getting faster. Everything's faster. I was at McDonald's the other day, and they've trying to get faster as well. It's fast food already. But you're standing in line. They come out and want to take your order, so it saves you about 15 seconds off the time. So they take it remotely. It's already fast food. I don't see the point. I was observing the other day what people do in their cars on the way to work to save time. It's amazing. I've seen, of course, the regular makeup thing, you know, at the lights, people putting on makeup. Invariably, the light turns green. You got to get them moving. I've seen guys shaving with shavers, eating breakfast on the way. I've even seen people, as of late, watching TV. That's dangerous. I saw somebody drying their hair once. Drying hair, fixing up the hair. I've seen plenty of people smoking with one hand and talking on the cell phone with the other, and I'm wondering who's driving the car. Who's holding onto the wheel? I've seen people changing clothes, reading the newspaper with on front of the wheel in front of them. Fingernails. How many of you painted fingernails on the way? A couple of you. Shame on you. And, you know, everything is just a fast nature. And technology makes everything just a little bit faster. We can go through the list of time devices which people have invented and come up with to do time. And nobody seems to have any extra time. So with all our time-saving devices, where's all the time saved gone? I was thinking of what happens to me when I don't slow down. I'm going to give you a few effects of a hurried lifestyle. A lifestyle of hurriedness. Let me give you a few and see if you relate to these. This is how what happens to me. Number one, I feel more stress. I feel more stress. When you're always in a hurry, your personal reserves get depleted. That margin is depleted. And you live in stress. And you have to periodically slow down. I think that's the way God is. I'm going to talk more about that in a little bit. There's nothing wrong with going fast. I'm not saying we have to go slow everywhere we go. But I'm saying you go fast and then you go slow. You speed up for a while, but then you remember to slow down for a while. It's the ebb and flow kind of thing of our life. You're not the Energizer Bunny. Remember that stupid Energizer Bunny on TV? Always going, going, going. But even the Energizer Bunny eventually will stop. It will crash. It will burn. And so will you. I feel more stress. Number two is this. I lose my joy. If I don't take the time to slow down sometimes, I lose my joy. Maybe you can relate to that too. The faster you go in life, the less time you have to enjoy things. The truth is you can't enjoy life. You can't enjoy things as you go fast. Job 9:25, he says, my days are swifter than a runner. They fly without a glimpse of joy. That sound like you at times? They fly away without a glimpse of joy. I was thinking about this. I've traveled around the world, and as many of you have. But if you want to see a country, the way to do it is not flying at 600 miles an hour in an airplane, right? I flew over Australia. Did I really get to see Australia? Did I get to enjoy it? Of course not. And then I was thinking, okay, you get on a train. Jen and I took a train trip on the South Island one time. It was a beautiful ride. And you get to see things as they're going by. And you're like, oh, look at that, you know, and there it goes. Oh, look at that. We get to enjoy it a little better. Then we get in a car and we're able to kind of cruise down the countryside. We've been doing a little sightseeing this week with our friends, showing them a bit of New Zealand. Beautiful. It's a beautiful country, really, that we have to live in. And if you're here and you're new in the country and you haven't taken time to tour around, take the time. Get to know your country a little bit. It's a fantastic place. And driving around in a car, you can enjoy it a little more. But if you really want to get to know a town good, you know what you have to do? You have to get out and use the old legs and walk around and take the time to enjoy, take the time to meet someone, take the time to talk to people and be able to go slow. There's a time for going fast. There's a time for going slow. You go fast, you lose the joy in life. Number three is mind. I become less productive. I become less productive if I'm just at a breakneck speed. You have to slow down sometimes in your life. Every creative person knows this. People who like to write, who like to do music, or like to write music, like to draw artists, they know there's a time that they have to be able to slow down for a while. I become less productive. I saw a bumper sticker a while back that said, the hurrier I go, you know the rest? The hurrier I go, the behinder I get. The faster you go, it seems, to just the more behind you get. I become less productive. Number four, this is what happens to me. And this is the worst one. I can't hear God. I can't hear Him. If I don't take the time to stop and listen, to slow down and listen, because God's not going to compete with all the noise and all the distractions in my life. If I don't first stop, slow down, and focus on Him for a while. And say, God, I want to hear from You. I want to commune with You for a while. I want to know You better. Be quiet. Psalm 46:10. Be still and know that I am God. Doesn't say, know I'm God while you're flat on your way to work. Hey, we can know God then too. But He says, there's a time to be still and know that I'm God. This morning, I want to give you some counterculture changes. Things that go against our culture. Counterculture changes that we need to be willing to make in our life. In our relationship to God. If we want to have the kind of relationship with God that we crave, that we desire, and that we need, we got to make some counterculture changes. And the things that I'm going to tell you today are things that go against what many other people in the world are going to tell you. That's the truth. But that's okay, because that's normal, because a lot of the things that the Bible has to say to us are things that go against the culture and against what other people in the world say to us. So the first one is this. We need to learn contentment. If you're serious about knowing God better, and if you're serious about being willing to take the time to slow down, the first place to start is not with our schedule. We can't do that. You can try to do that, but if you do that, I guarantee you that it's going to work for a couple of weeks, and then you're going to find you're just reverting back to the same routine. What we need to be willing to do, though, is to start with the heart. We need to start with our heart. We need to ask ourselves, have we learned this idea of contentment? Paul talked about contentment in Philippians 4:11. He said, I have learned to be content. What's the next word? Whatever the circumstances. First of all, notice that he says, I have learned to be content. This tells me that it's something that he had to learn as well. This tells me that this is something that probably doesn't come naturally to many of us. It doesn't come naturally to me to be content. I think it's in our human fallen nature to be discontent with what we have. I think that's a part of our nature. And we have to learn contentment. Fill in this statement for me. The grass is always greener. On the other side of what? The fence, okay? What does that mean? That means I don't like my side of the fence. I always like what's on the other side of the fence. It always looks better on the other side. And if you don't learn to be content with where you are, with your life, with your wife, with your husband, your family, your kids, with your income, Your status, your prestige, and I will even say be content in your church, you're never going to be content no matter what the circumstances are. You're never going to be content because it doesn't have to do with the circumstances. Contentment takes place in the heart. And that's why Paul said, I have learned to be content whatever my circumstances. And he meant it. He meant it because Paul had, he didn't live a cushy life of luxury. Paul knew what it was to have lots. He knew what it was like to have nothing. He knew what it was to be free. He knew what it was to be in prison. Paul had suffered a great deal for the Lord. And even in prison, even after being beaten, being abused, being mistreated, misunderstood, he still said, I have learned to be content. Because contentment takes place here, not externally. We need to learn contentment. How do we do that? I want to read 1 Timothy 6, verse 6. It says, godliness with contentment is great gain. For we brought nothing into the world, and we can take nothing out of it. But if we have food and clothing, we will be content with that. What he's saying here is basically life really isn't about things. Life isn't about your hoarding. It's not about things. The greatest things in life are not things at all. I didn't have anything before I was born. I'm not going to have anything after I die. So things are not what it's about. Yeah, things are there and God gives us things and they're there for us to use. But it's not what brings contentment. Let me explain too what contentment is not. Contentment is not having no ambition. Saying, well, the Bible tells me to be content, so I'm just going to be content. And I'm not going to try to do better. I'm not going to get any more education. I'm not going to try to get a better job. We need a bigger house, but I'm going to be content with what I have. That's not necessarily what he's saying. We ought to have ambition. God has given you a certain amount of abilities to be able to use, and he wants you to use them to the full. The parable of, you know, the talents and the stewards. Whatever God has given to you, he wants and expects you to use them. So contentment is not having no ambition, but it means this. Contentment means I don't need more in order for me to be happy. You see the difference? I don't have to have more for me to be happy and content inside. That's a heart issue. And I'm not going to wait for more to be happy. And if you're constantly in that waiting game, the if only game, if only I can get through school, then I'll be happy. If only I could have more money, then I'd be happy. If only I got the promotion, then I'd be happy. If only my wife would be the kind of woman she should be, then I'd be happy. If only my husband would be more caring and help around the house, then I'd be happy. And you go through your life. If only we had a bigger house, then I'd be happy. If only we would move to this city or this country, then we'd be happy. And you go your whole life, and let me tell you, it's going to bring stress. It's going to bring disappointment. And you're going to go faster and faster, always looking for the elusive happiness because you're lacking contentment inside. Happiness is a choice. Happiness is a choice that we can have, and you cannot blame a lack of happiness on circumstances. You cannot blame a lack of happiness on circumstances. If you're not happy with the circumstances that you have right now, you're not going to be happy if you haven't learned contentment with your circumstances now. You're not going to be happy with other circumstances. You're not going to be content with other circumstances. You may think you will, and it may bring a certain relief, a temporary joy, a temporary happiness, but eventually if the heart has not changed and is not different and hasn't learned contentment, that's going to change. The question you need to ask is, what drives you to continually push for more? What drives you to go faster, to never slow down? What keeps you going fast? There are a few major myths of our culture, and maybe you believe one of these myths. Let me list them. The first myth is, having more will make me more happy. Having more will make me more happy. The Kiwi dream of winning the lottery. Man, if I could win the lottery and have all that, boy, that would be set. I would be so happy. Everybody in my family would be happy. We'd all get along. We'd hold hands and we'd just be happy together. That's not true. It would be temporary, but eventually, without the heart change, you'd be just as miserable. Nicer car, but you'd be just as miserable. The Bible says a man's life does not consist of the abundance of the things he possesses. Jesus says, what does it profit a man if he gained the whole world but lose his own soul? And you and I both know, and we can name a whole bunch of people who have plenty of things, but they're still very, very unhappy people. You can name a few in your mind right now, can't you? Plenty of things. You take a look at their circumstances and you scratch your head and say, man, with all this, why aren't they happy people? If I had all those things, I'd be a happy person. Proverbs 23 tells us, do not wear yourself out to get rich. Have the wisdom to show restraint. Having more does not make you happy. We must learn our contentment from Christ. Even with nothing. If you can learn contentment and happiness with nothing, you can be content and happy with something. The second myth I want to share, maybe you believe this, doing more will make me more worthy. In other words, if I do more, people will love me more. If I do more, I'll be respected. If I do more, I will be valued. If I do more, I'll be appreciated. I'll be admired. People will look up to me. If you get your work and your self-worth confused, you're going to be stressed out your whole life. Because there never is a time when you arrive to a certain status and you say, I'm there. I'm at the stage where I'm in front of everybody and everybody looks up to me and admires me. It always is the next step. It's the next step. It's the step after that. And you stress out and work out to make it and you find it's never there. It's always the next step. I believe that what you find behind a lot of high achievers, ambitious people, driven people, a lot of it is a great deal of high insecurity as well. High insecurity. The insecurity that is driving them to overachieve, to be super achievers, is to get the approval of somebody. Maybe it's their mommy or daddy that they never got the approval of. It might be. And even if mommy or daddy have long since passed on, they have this mindset of, I got to please them. I've got to do enough that they would approve of me. Ecclesiastes 4, verse 6 tells us, better one handful with tranquility than two handfuls with toil and chasing after the wind. Better one handful and be tranquil and content than two handfuls that you're constantly stressing out about. I believe a lot of people in our world do the two handful thing. They do the two handful thing. And I believe it's evident because we want more things. We have to have more things now. And instead of two handfuls, we're more reliant these days on double incomes. Used to be, most households could survive on one income. One income was enough. It would take care of their needs. Now listen, I'm not saying housing hasn't gotten very expensive. I know this. But I also believe that it's kind of a mindset. In the late 90s, when Jen and I were even in Texas, where I believe housing was quite affordable and incomes were not all that bad, there was this continual mindset To have everything that we need, we have to have two handfuls. We have to have both incomes. And the idea and the thought of possibly having one income was just impossible. We couldn't keep up with all our payments with one income. I'm not saying you cannot have some wonderful things. But I am saying that sometimes it might be smarter to perhaps have the smaller home with tranquility than it would be to continually stress and stretch yourself to the point of breaking, trying to meet the needs of something beyond your reach. Something that is beyond your realm of contentment. Oftentimes we're motivated by ego, by self-centeredness, by the desire for applause, unhealthy emotions. I believe that many of these things, ego-driven things, are a form of idols, idolatry. In our culture, we don't have a lot of idols. I know in some countries, Asian countries, there's real, literal idols. But not so much in New Zealand and with Kiwi people. But we have other kinds of idols. I remember when I was in junior high. I was in junior high and we were in the States. And I just hit, I believe, 12 years of age. 12 years of age. And I discovered fashion for the first time in my life. And I had to invest everything I had into fashion. And I was happening. You know, I had the right shirts. And at the time, it was the cool polos with the alligators on the thing. Now, that alligator meant something. That alligator on my shirt meant I'm cool. It meant this is prestige. It meant you need to respect me. It meant all kinds of things. But I had to have the certain clothes. And then we moved to New Zealand. And I was 13 years old with all these shirts with alligators on them. And I get to New Zealand. And at this time, they didn't have those things here. And I wear all those to school thinking I'm really happening. I'm really it. And it meant nothing. I didn't impress anybody. And so I changed my thinking a little bit. And I realized that that's just a symbol. That's just an idol to some. And I believe that as adults we change a little bit. And we're not perhaps, I hope, so concerned with a label that might be on our clothing, a picture that's on our shirts or on our pants or on our shoes. I hope not, but maybe some of you are. But we have other kind of symbols too. Which street you live on. Which area you live in. What symbol you have on your car. Things like this. And I bet that one day we're all, hopefully, we're all going to be in heaven, and we're going to take a look back, and it's just like me and when I was 13 coming to New Zealand, and it means nothing. We're going to get to heaven, and all those symbols we're going to see mean this much. Nothing. And we're going to take a look saying, why did we invest and waste so much energy and stress out so much and go so fast to earn all those status symbols and all those idols? And it means nothing. It means absolutely nothing. Reminds me of that story of a guy who died, and on his way up to heaven, St. Peter told him, you can bring one suitcase of anything you want in the world with you. And he chose to bring all his bars of gold. You guys heard this one before? All his bars of gold. And he gets up to the gates, and Peter checks his bag out, and he opens up his case, and he sees all the gold, and he says, man, you just wanted to bring road pavement with you into heaven? Sorry, that was lame. So we have this, the streets of gold, you know. We have this idea that doing more will make me more worthy. Who are you trying to impress? The third myth I wanted to share with you is life is a competition with other people. It is not. I don't care who tells you this. Life is not a competition with other people. You've heard the slogan, the saying, the expression, if you would, we need to keep up with the Joneses. Good. Let me tell you, my wife was a Jones before she married and became a Young. I saved her from that. My wife was a Jones, and I know her family, and they're not really that rich, and so it really has no meaning. That expression means nothing to me. It's not about keeping up with the Joneses. It's not about keeping up with your neighbor, with your boss, with your friends, nobody else. Why? Because you are, first of all, unique. You are a unique person. God designed you and made you very uniquely. Every one of us are very different. We all have our different fingerprints. We all have a different beat of our heart. We're all very unique. I don't care if you're a twin. If you're a twin. We have a twin here, right? Yael's got a twin brother. And if you saw his brother with him, most of you would say, boy, they look alike. How can you tell them apart? But let me tell you, they're both very unique. There's definitely more similarities than normal, but they are unique individuals. And God made and designed you uniquely, and He gifted you uniquely. And He never put you on earth to say, now I want you to do more than this person here. You stand before God, He's going to say, what did you do with what I gave you? What did you do with the abilities I entrusted you with? I gave you smarts. What did you do with those smarts? I gave you some wealth. Might be small wealth, it might be very large wealth. What did you do with that wealth? What did you do with what I entrusted you with? And when you start comparing yourself to other people, it does a few things. It creates envy. There's always going to be somebody who has more than you. It creates jealousy. If you compare yourself with other people, you're going to find somebody who has something that you don't have. I don't care what it is. You might be comparing income. You might be comparing your house. You might be comparing your teeth. Why do they have such white teeth? And they're so straight and they never had braces. I had to have braces to get my teeth this straight, okay? And I envied people who had straight teeth naturally. And it made me angry because I put up with 3 years of braces. I still haven't gotten over that. But comparing and contentment are enemies against each other. Comparing and contentment don't mix. You cannot go through life comparing. It's not a competition with other people. And immediately when you start comparing, you're going to get discontented. You either will get discontent or you'll get prideful. It does one of the two. You might look at some and you're doing better than they are, and so you become proud. And you look at the next person and you're doing worse than they are, and you get discontent. You lose both ways. Proverbs 14, verse 30. A heart at peace gives life to the body, but envy rots the bones. Is envy a healthy lifestyle? No. Is contentment a healthy lifestyle? Absolutely. Contentment, meaning you don't have to have more in order to be happy. It's not a lack of ambition, but it's meaning I am content and I can be happy and I choose to be happy right now in my circumstances and with what I have right now. So, counterculture number one, learn contentment. How are you doing with contentment in your life? Number two, you must listen before speaking. Have you noticed how on radio and on TV, people don't let people finish before they start talking? Have you ever talked with somebody like that? You can't have a conversation with them because as soon as you do, they start jumping in and cutting you off because they have something far more important than you do to say on the subject. Don't you hate that? Why have we, so many of us, gotten so rude when it comes to this? One of the answers, I believe, is the speed of life that we live in. We become impatient and unwilling to let other people finish a thought before we have to jump in and share our thought. Because we're in such a hurry, we don't have time to sit and listen. Listen before speaking. We butt in. James 1:19 reminds us that everyone should be quick to listen slow to speak and slow to become angry. Notice a couple things. First of all, you do the first two things, and the third thing kind of comes more naturally. If you're slow to speak, if you're quick to listen, the becoming angry part kind of falls in line after that. And some of you might be saying, I don't really have an anger problem in here. I don't have an anger problem. I'm not an angry person. But the truth is, many of you are. You might not be overt about it. I was teaching class a couple of weeks ago to the young adults. I said, many people have anger problems, but you're either one of two things. You're either a skunk or you're a turtle. A skunk or turtle. Many of you in here are skunks. You know who you are. When situations arise and you get angry, you just smell up the whole room and you let everyone know about it and you don't hide it. You stink. Who's a skunk? No, raise your hand. The turtle, on the other hand, and many of you are turtles, and skunks often marry turtles. The turtle, on the other hand, in a time of conflict, what happens? They just kind of withdraw. They withdraw emotionally. They just withdraw themselves from the situation, and they just clam up, and they play the game of, guess what's wrong with me? Guess why I'm angry? And they give you the silent treatment. I see some of you wives snickering. They get the silent treatment. You're either a skunk or a turtle. We have anger problems. We show it in different ways. But we need to be slower to speak, quicker to listen. You ever notice people don't really trust salesmen? Why? They're fast talkers. They're fast talkers. The things that annoy me the most on TV are the commercials where a guy gets up in a high volume pitch and he starts really talking fast, and today only if you come, we're going to do this, this, and this for you. And he won't shut up. And he's high power sales pitch. How would you like to talk to somebody like that? Why don't we like that fast talking? Because you get the feeling and impression that they're trying to pull something over you. That they're trying to slip something under. I've seen medicine ads, and at the end they have about, 500 words in about 10 seconds saying all the side effects that this drug may have on you. They try to slip something in. This drug may cause nausea, diarrhea, and it may cause slight discomfort of bowels, and then it goes on and may cause death. And they just try to slip in all the bad things very fast. Proverbs 29 says, "Do you see a man who speaks in haste? There is more hope for a fool than for him." Listen before speaking. We need to practice this art of taking time to listen. Doing what the Bible says. Be quick to listen, slow to speak, slow to become angry. A lot of misunderstanding comes when you don't listen and you just babble off what's on your mind. And sometimes the first thing that comes to your mind is not the thing that needs to be spoken anyway. And if you take a moment to pray about it, it may change. Number three is this. You obey the fourth commandment. And some of you are thinking, oh man, what's the fourth commandment? Let's see. Okay, you obey the fourth commandment, and it's not honor your mother and father. That's a good one though. It's not do not commit murder. That's a good one. It's not stealing. The fourth commandment. God made us. He understands us. He knows us like nobody else. He's our designer. He's the master. He designed us just so. And He told us that I want you to rest. And He modeled that for us when He did creation. And on the seventh day, God rested. And He says, I'm going to give you 10 commandments. Moses went up to get the commandments. He says, I'm giving you 10. One of them is about rest. One of them is about the Sabbath. Exodus 20, verse 9. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work. But the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work. He's saying, I designed you. I know what's best for you. This is what is best for you. And we can't go on and ignore His law. We can go on and ignore what he says is the best for you, but you will pay for it and you will suffer for it. God says rest is so important, I'm going to put it in this Big Ten list. Take one day off every week. That's the Sabbath. Sabbath literally means the day of rest. This is an easy one to violate. Especially those of you who are self-employed, you're prone to try to violate this. Those of you who own your own businesses, you're prone to violate this. Why? Because your rest day is the day that you might use to catch up on everything. I don't have time during the work week, and so I'm going to use my Sabbath to catch up with the things I couldn't catch up on before. And you almost look forward to going back to work to get the rest you need. Because you've used your Sabbath wrongly. You can do that, and it may benefit you in the short term. But you violate this principle, you're going to suffer for it. There's a few things that I must do on the Sabbath. I must rest my body. I need to be able to rest my body. If you don't slow down by your choice, eventually circumstances may slow you down because your body can't keep up. It's not made to do that. God designed your body to need a solid day of rest. God says, I want you to make the choice. I don't want it to happen that way. Second, I need to recharge my emotions. I need to do some things that will recharge myself emotionally. Through a week, my emotions may get frazzled. They've been on a roller coaster ride. It's been tough. I need to do things that will recharge them. Things like being quiet. Things like reconnecting in some relationships, especially with my family. Just being together with some others. Even sometimes a kind of recreation that rejuvenates you. And that may be different for some of you. Some of you may find rejuvenation on the golf course. I don't. I get to the golf course and I see the birds and the trees and I love it. And I start swinging that stupid club and that doesn't do what I want it to do. And man, it's frustrating. And I tell you what, after 18 holes, I will not have had a Sabbath. And finally, I need to refocus my spirit. This is worship. I don't take a time off from God because God is my source of strength. God is my nourishment. I need to worship. Worship puts my life in perspective. Some of you need to do this as well. Worship God. Rejuvenate yourself spiritually. Some of you may be sinning even by serving God. You're serving God continually, but you're not taking a Sabbath time to rest and rejuvenate yourself spiritually. And you're burning out. You're running on empty. I can do it, and I know you can do it too. Obey the fourth commandment. Fourth, pause and pray before deciding some things. I'm talking about decisions. Decisions you make on a regular basis. Don't be quick to speak. Be quick to pray. This is something that God is working on me on. When I make a decision, I want to first be able to say, God, is this your will? God, give me the wisdom. What do you want me to do in this situation? It may be a quick prayer. You may need to make a decision quickly. But you can always still take a time and pause and say, God, I need your wisdom in this. Stop, pause, and pray before making some of your decisions. This is not the same as just saying, well, I'm going to pray about it, and you're procrastinating. But it's being willing with every decision in your life to say, God, I need you in this. 50 years from now, people are not going to look back on me and say, did Pastor Ken make quick decisions? They're going to say, did he make good decisions? Did he make wise decisions? Did he make the right decisions? Those are the decisions that I want to be able to make, and I'm not going to be able to do it with my own self, on my own power. Proverbs 19, verse 2. I like this. It's not good to have zeal without knowledge. Zeal is, another word is enthusiasm. But being enthusiastic without getting all facts is stupid. Being enthusiastic without understanding all the facts is not smart. Knowledge with zeal without knowledge is not good. A person who moves quickly may move in the wrong direction. So we need to be able to stop, pause, and pray about something. Pray about it. Don't jump. Proverbs 20. It is a trap for a man to dedicate something rashly and only later to consider his vows. Do you pray about the decisions that you make? Because it's a trap for someone to dedicate themselves to something, commit themselves to something quickly, and only to stop later and say, man, maybe I shouldn't have done that. And we do that all the time. And it's shown in our society by the amount of debt that we collect. We commit ourselves quickly to paying out lots of money every month, and we jump into things only later to realize, hey, there's no such thing as easy monthly payments. I don't care what the sign says, every payment is painful. Every payment is difficult. It's not easy. How many of you would agree that it's easier to get into debt than it is to get out of debt? It's easier to get into trouble than it is to get out of trouble. It's easier to make a commitment to something than it is to get out of that commitment. It's always easier. Stop, pause, and pray. That's what God is saying. Ponder and pray before promising. The other thing that you need to learn, and maybe the hard way, is that you can't keep adding things to your schedule without eliminating some other things. Don't keep adding things without getting rid of some things. Clearing the table a little bit before the next meal. There was a time when I was in Bible school and I had a lot of zeal without knowledge. Zeal without knowledge, a dangerous thing. And so I had an afternoon job from 1 o'clock to 6 o'clock in the afternoon. Then I had an hour to eat. Then I had a 7 o'clock till midnight job cleaning a cafeteria. And then I had the bright idea of, hey, a paper route will bring in extra money in the morning. And so I was up at 4 o'clock in the morning collecting papers to deliver for a couple of hours in the morning. And then I went to school until the afternoon. Needless to say, zeal without knowledge gets you into big trouble. It's easier to take on responsibilities and commitments than it is to get out of them. And that was the worst semester of my life. Don't do that. Ponder and pray about something before you commit. You have to eliminate some things to take on other things. You take on, put on a hat, you got to take off a hat. You just don't keep piling hats on top of your head. There are plenty of things that you can do in life, but not every one of them is something that God would want you to do. There are plenty of good things you can do in life, but not every one of them is something that God wants you to do. Ponder, pray, stop, pause, and pray. Ask God's wisdom. Number five, finally, we need to trust God's timing. Timing. You know what impatience is? Impatience. It's a lack of trust. It's a lack of trust. It's saying, God, I don't believe that you have my best interest at heart. I don't believe that you take my needs serious. I don't believe you understand what I'm saying. Is fast always better? No. Not always. Ecclesiastes 3:11 reminds us that He, God, hath made everything beautiful in His time. It's up to Him. He's made everything beautiful in His time. God is in control. He knows. And yes, He hears your prayers. He hears your needs. He knows them. And He encourages you to come to Him and pray. But maturity is being able to wait. A little kid, a 5-year-old kid, wants it now. I'm hungry. Give me food now. Maturity can say, you know, I'm really hungry. Oh, dinner's about ready in 30 minutes. Oh, I can wait. And the kid's screaming and crying. And if your husband's still screaming and crying because dinner's not ready now, he needs to grow up. God has a plan for your life. You know that? Not only that, but God has a timetable for your life. And sometimes it gets frustrating for us because we don't know God's timetable all the time. But trust and maturity is being able to say, God, I know you're in control, and I will wait on you. I will wait in your time. You made everything beautiful in your time. And maturity is being able to see the difference between the answer no and the answer not yet. God has your best interest at heart. He has a plan for your life. He has a timetable for your life. But we must trust in God's timing. How are you doing? Are you able today to slow down? To take these points to heart? To slow down and to stop and know that He is God? Let's do that right now. Would you stand up with me again? You know, of all times in the week, this ought to be at least one time that we can stop and dedicate this time totally to God. Open our hearts, open our minds, and dedicate it to God. That's why we say no cell phones in here, please. We don't need to have a cell phone on in here. We need to be able to stop and know that He's God. Listen for Him. Listen to Him. And this morning, I want to encourage you as God's people to take that time just to come before God and say, God, help me to know you better. Help me to slow down long enough to hear you, to focus on you. Help me, Lord, to learn to be content. Lord, help me to learn to be slow to speak, but quick to listen. And slow to become angry. Lord, help me to keep that commandment of the Sabbath, to have a day of rest in my life where I recharge my body, my emotions, and my spirit with you. Lord, help me to pause and to pray before I decide things. And Father, help me to trust in God and in your timing. Help me to trust your timing, not become impatient. Lord, teach me contentment. Help me to be content in my circumstances. Today, help me to learn contentment. In Jesus' name, amen.